So that used to surprise us, because even our grandfathers, they used to smoke the sticks and sit under the shade of a big tree and discuss the serious conversation. But now, when we're trying to follow them, we found that day. We are getting arrested now.
Sina yeye hanijali, siku nyingine alikuja kapala, tukaanza kutafuta Ja, hallo, hier ist Felicia Herrschaft, heute mit einer Sendung mit einem Gast, und zwar mit Eddie Bierda.
Ja.
Uganda.
Uganda.
Uganda, yeah, okay. Yeah, so, yeah, nice that you joined this radio.
Uh-huh.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Felicia, for inviting me in your show.
Yeah.
And hello to everyone listening to this radio.
Yeah, so we heard in the beginning some music from Uganda.
Yes.
It's interesting, very... It's really... Is that a new kind of standard? Like,
yeah,
this pop music?
It's Afrobeat. They call it Afrobeat music. It's kind of a combination between African beats and the Western.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Uh-huh. So it's a new style of music in Uganda.
Yeah. Mm. That's very nice. Mm. Yeah, I mean, we can start probably in thinking about maybe... I said that I would like to ask a question, like, if you could remember the time when you started to think about becoming an artist.
My interest in art draws back to my childhood. I really enjoyed a lot of drawing and painting when I was a kid. And I did a lot of that, writing with charcoal on the walls, like something like the graffiti you have here in Frankfurt.
Yeah.
But I did a lot of that in the walls, and sometimes I got punished for that, flattening the walls.
Okay.
And in class, I also did a lot of cartoons of my friends and everyone, and it kind of amused everyone around. So... And I didn't think of becoming an artist then, but when I was joining the university, I find out that there is a course, a Bachelor of Industrial and Fine Arts. So I thought this was the right thing for me to do. So it was at that time when I was joining the university that I thought it would be the right thing for me to become an artist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in which age were you when you... painted the walls?
10.
What was that? What time was that?
It should be the age between the time.
Yeah. Your age. Probably.
Okay, the age.
Sorry.
It should be the age of, from the age of 6.
Yeah.
Up to 12, 15, you know?
Mm.
Yeah. I was doing a lot of drawing, but maybe in my exercise books, I didn't have sketchbooks or anything, but I could do a lot of drawing whenever I got a free paper and a pen to do that.
So you did that in school, I swear.
It didn't start in school. It didn't. It's something in me that keeps coming out whenever I get an opportunity. So...
Yeah.
It basically started with me, inside me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And could you probably describe a little bit more what kind, how you lived in that time? What kind of, how was the environment or the houses on which you were painting?
Okay.
If you like.
Between that time, I lived in the upcountry area of Uganda, and this is in central Uganda, and it's a village.
Yeah,
you can't compare to the villages in Germany because here they are a bit different. But this is an environment with a brick house with plastered walls, maybe painted, and. When you get a piece of charcoal is like burnt wood, then you can write something on the wall. So I did a lot of that at home and at school, because we have the same walls at school. But if I could give the general environment of the village, we have a lot of houses that are built out of mud and water, you know.
Then it's difficult to paint on these boys.
Yeah, but it's interesting how the people in the villages do some paintings.
Yeah.
On the walls, they use earth colors.
Yeah.
Because we've got different shades of earth, like we have the red, the brown, and the black in the swamps. So they kind of combine that with cow dung. Then they can do something on the walls of their houses, something to decorate the houses.
So, cow dung?
Yeah, cow dung.
Ah.
It has a kind of army green color, so
yeah.
It makes a good combination with the browns of the earth. Yeah.
So that's very traditional to have these colors at home. It's not like the Zulu houses which are around?
No, it's traditional to have... The huts.
Yeah.
The houses are huts. So to have the huts painted.
All right.
So when a young man builds his hut, then he'll paint the walls or decorate them, try to decorate them, you know, to make it nice.
Mm.
Yeah. And we have people in the villages who do that. Not everybody can do that. So when somebody builds a hut, then he'll call somebody who is good at the decorations on the house, then he'll do that.
All right.
Yeah.
But you as a child, you weren't asked.
But as a child, I wasn't asked. I didn't get the chance. So, yeah.
It's okay. So, your family, I mean, do you have some painters in your family or is your family interested in art?
No. Interestingly, there's no one doing art in my family. And it was kind of hard for me to convince my family that I was going to be an artist. I was going to the university to study art because I had qualified to go to the law school. I got enough grades to go to the law school. But I told everyone, no, I want to be an artist.
Mm.
And this was really disturbing for my family. And I was like, what are you going to earn with art, you know? You should be a lawyer. And everybody thinks like this.
Yeah.
You know, whenever I thought advice, everybody was telling me this.
Yeah.
So in my family, art is not really, I should say, I'm the only artist in my family. And it was not welcomed. The idea was not welcomed. But I have to do it because it's what I like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, when you went to university, I mean... Mm. How was this to study art? Could you describe this? I mean,
yeah,
education do you have?
For me, from the personal point of view, it was a kind of a drastic move to start studying art, you know, the principles and the elements of art, you know, color, designs, the structure, you know, all those principles. It was hard for me to tune into the kind of structured training in art, and it was a big step for me to move from what I was the little cartoons and drawings I was making, and I thought I was a great artist, but now here I had to learn art, and with a number of students who were really. Who offered a big, a stiff competition, and I really had to work hard to match up to the levels of the School of Art, because you have to attain some grades to get the degree. So it was a big move for me, and at the university I went to Makerere University, Kampala, which is the biggest and the oldest university in East Africa.
How old is it?
It's now 49 years now.
49, okay.
Yeah. But it started as a college for colonial administrators, then eventually turned into a university. But the training we get at the university is not very different from other universities worldwide. Because when you read when you meet somebody who is at the university in Frankfurt, he will tell you something the same as you're doing.
Yeah.
So it's not really different. We do drawing as a subject. We do painting, history of art, graphic design. But the only difference is that we don't have the equipment like computers for the design department as you could be having them here at the art schools. So that could be the only difference. But the material that is taught is basically the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe another point which could be interested. You are. I mean, there are tribes in Uganda.
Yes.
And I don't know how many tribes. I think you said 11.
We are close to 50.
50.
There are over 50 tribes, and actually, they are still discovering more tribes that we had not known before. The tribes that live in the mountains.
Yeah.
Of Rwenzori. So we are over 50 tribes in Uganda, and Uganda has regions, and we have a different tribe from each of these regions, and they kind of speak the same language but different dialects.
Yeah.
So I come from the central Uganda, and we speak the same language but different dialects with about 3 to 5 different tribes. But culturally, the tribes are different. They have different cultural norms and practices.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the tribes are not mixed.
They are mixed?
Let's say married.
Yeah, with tribes, time, so. before it was not happening a lot because everybody was confined to their tribes. But now with the modern world, people move.
Yeah.
Like we have a lot of people living in the capital.
Yeah.
And the capital is in the central, more or less in the central part of Uganda. So we almost have somebody from each of the tribes living in Kampala.
Yeah.
So it's easy to relate and get to know what happens in another tribe.
So from which tribe are you?
I'm from the Ganda tribe.
Ganda.
And it's from this tribe that we get the name Uganda, and we speak Luganda.
Ah, yeah.
The language is Luganda, or the dialect.
Yeah.
So it's in the central. This tribe is located in the central part of Uganda, where the capital is.
Yeah.
So during the colonial days, this tribe was enjoyed the central part in the administration and the general running of the country. So we had the administrative offices there. We had Baganda go to school early because the university is in Kampala. So.
Mm.
It's the central tribe, I should say. And to live in Kampala, you basically have to speak Luganda because everybody speaks Luganda.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
So we've got people from other regions coming to Kampala, and they have to learn Luganda to be able to communicate and relate with others. Yeah.
So the songs we heard, this was in Luganda or in Kiswahili? Swahili was the second.
The first song was in Luganda, and the second song is in Swahili.
Yeah.
Because Swahili is kind of the East African language.
Yeah.
It is also spoken in other countries in Africa, but mostly in East Africa, and more so in Tanzania and Kenya.
Mm.
In Uganda, we don't speak much Swahili, but in Kenya and Tanzania, they use it as an official language. Uganda, we use English. So the Swahili language is kind of spreading over to Uganda, and we hope with time, as these countries try to merge into one community, maybe it will become the official language.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So... When you grew up, so it was on the countryside.
It was on the countryside up to about 10 years. Then I came to the city.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. One sec. They make me. They want to do something. I don't know. okay, you came to the city.
So I started living in the city.
When you were
about 12.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. So what was then the difference? I mean, you came into the city. How was it for you, this experience coming from the countryside
To the city?
Yeah.
The life in the city is different. So you take time to adjust to it. Like the education system in the villages, we could use Luganda as a means of communication. Like the teachers would kind of teach in Luganda a little bit and in English. But when I came to Kampala, the Kampala schools are basically the medium of communication is English. So that was a bit of adjustment for me.
Mm.
And the lifestyle, you know, the lifestyle changes because of the structures around you, like the houses, the roads, everything changes to the better, maybe, or to the modern.
Yeah.
So you have telephones, you have running water in the houses,
yeah.
But in the village it doesn't happen. And you use the cooker to cook food, but in the village you use the fireplace, you know,
yeah.
You use firewood. The kind of games you play in the village as kids kind of change also. In the town you have table tennis, you know, you have balls, football, you play football, you have the mode of doing things changes. Like I could say in the villages we used to play football, but we make the football out of banana fibers, you know.
Okay.
And when I came to Kampala, the kind of footballs they had are the modern, you know, the pressure balls. So you kick it and it bounces 10 times.
Okay.
So there were a lot of things to adjust to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. And so if your father worked, what you told me, as an animal
veterinary doctor.
Yeah. Mm. So have you been in contact with a lot of animals or was it something which were separated?
Yeah, when we lived in the village, we kept animals, you know, like cows,
yeah.
Pigs, goats, rabbits,
yeah.
Chicken, sheep. So we had a dog, you know. So, those but in Kampala, there is not much space to keep those animals. So,
we
didn't have any in the city.
All right. So that changed.
It changed
a lot. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
And maybe after university. Mm. After probably your degree or in art, you start then what kind of paintings or art?
When I left the university, you know, the first thing was to earn money, you know, and to earn money as an artist I started earning some money when I was still a student.
Mm.
I could get contracts from people, organizations. They want doing illustrations for them, for posters or something like that. So I basically started earning some money while I was still a student. And now it changed when I graduated, because now I needed real enough money to sustain me, like to rent a house, to do this and that. So it was a bit hard to earn enough.
Mm.
As an artist, because you basically rely on jobs from people which are not which are basically seasonal. They are not they don't come in all the time until you make a name that people start looking for you. So as a fresh graduate from the university, it is always hard to, as an artist, to survive. But I kind of made it in a way that I had some contacts already while I was still at the university. So I could get something to live by. And I made more contacts. I could go out, organized my portfolio, and went to different offices and said, this is what I can do. If you ever have any work like this, please call me. And with time, I have managed to build a fairly good clientele. I mean, groups of people who give me jobs. So with time, I believe I can make it. And I think it happens to all the artists, because every time you do something for someone, then he'll call you the next time. So with time, you get a big clientele.
Mm.
And you basically earn some money, some more money, you know, with time. But another thing I had to do was to get a job that could assure me of a monthly income, you know, because with art jobs, you can't be sure that next month I'll get enough to pay for the bills. So I started working with a group of with an organization. It runs an inner city program for children who are living on the streets. In Kampala, we have a lot of children who live on the streets, and they basically survive on stealing from the people on the streets, or basically stealing, and nobody likes them. So I started working with this organization, and they have homes around the city. So each home has about 20 children and two or three mentors or father figures or mother figures in the home, like adults who are keeping the house and looking after the children. So I started by living in that house and working with the children. It is funny how this whole thing developed, because I continued to do my painting and drawing while I lived in that house. And whenever I started drawing or painting, these children crowded around me, and they seemed interested in what I was doing. So I found art a means of communicating with these kids much easier than talking to them, because whenever you start a conversation with a child on the street or somebody, when we pick them on the street, you don't know them, they don't know you, it's hard for them to trust you, but it's hard for them to start telling you anything about themselves, their background or something. So when I started working and I was doing this, I didn't know how it would impact them, but they started coming around and watching me painting and drawing. Eventually I realized they were interested and they loved what I was doing. So I started sharing my materials with them. I give one of them a brush. Okay, there's a paper there, start painting. Then with time they all started coming around, and eventually it has developed into a program. And with time, I realized the potential of art as a healing tool to these children, because they feel free to paint their history than talk it out to a stranger. So it's an easy way to communicate to them, pouring out their feelings to you, and with time, you get connected and you begin communicating with them. So I started doing that work, and it kind of earns me a regular income while I do art.
So how would you describe this process when the children remember their history? What has this to do with the way you can paint?
That is an interesting question. When you look at my paintings, I've got a bit of inspiration from their paintings with time, and this has come unconsciously. It's not something I have developed intentionally, but I realize it with time that I kind of started painting like them, having some of the figures in my painting with likeness to what the kids paint, and it is really affecting me a lot. I see it. Artistically, it has had an impact on my style of painting. So I also see it as a direction in my artistic life and career. Yeah.
And you are using a special material. Mm. So probably, what would you like to?
I use this material is special to Uganda.
Yeah.
It's and to the Baganda tribe.
To the
Ganda tribe.
Yeah.
Before we started growing cotton in Uganda. That the cotton seeds were brought in by the British.
Yeah.
Previously, we didn't have cotton, but before we started having cotton fabric, the Baganda were wearing the bark cloth, and the bark cloth is made out of the bark of a mutuba tree. This is a tree that we grow a lot in central Uganda. It is just planted by cutting a piece, put it in the ground, then it develops into a tree. So they peel the bark of the tree once it's mature enough, then pound it with a wooden mallet until it flattens to the thickness of a fabric, and it can actually spread out to 2 meters, even more, if you have a good trunk of a mutuba tree. So I chose to use this material because it's traditional to my tribe, and it's cheaper than canvas.
Yeah,
and it has a unique textural value compared to the canvas because it's man-made. The mallet cannot make the same kind of pattern of thread. So it has a very beautiful texture, which when you paint on it, it kind of gives another effect that the canvas can't. So I use it a lot because it's cheaper and readily available at home. And it kind of identifies me as a Muganda artist.
Yeah, because it has really a different structure here, like the normal canvas,
which is squared.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what is happening when you start to paint? Because it has very lightful coloring. Yeah.
Yeah.
So probably should describe what how you paint.
How I paint? Oh. Yeah.
What happens if you start to make it deeper, with deeper effects on this surface?
The way I do it, I stretch this material on a frame or on a panel, wooden panel.
Yeah.
Then it has to be really stretched.
All right, then.
Then and flat. Then before I cut a piece, I know what I'm going to paint, and it fits on the format,
right,
on the piece of the cloth.
Mm-hmm.
So I sketch it out. Then I also use acrylic color because I find it user friendly. It is water based, and it dries faster than the oil. So I stretch it out, and I don't mix the colors on a palette, but I mix the colors on the surface of the back cloth.
Yeah,
and with that kind of with that way of doing it, the colors merge from the on the canvas. So I basically mix the colors on the cloth, And after the painting is done, you get to see different hues of color. And you visually mix the colors on the canvas. When you look at the painting as an individual, as somebody watching, you kind of see different colors merging into others and forming other colors. Mm. So I think that is the beauty of doing it that way. So, and the texture also, because sometimes the brush does not go deep into the cloth. So we have a bit of unpainted back cloth in the background. So when that combines with the color, it's really comes out strongly to the person looking at it. Mm. And it's very, I also use bright colors. I don't know why, but I like using bright colors.
Mm-hmm.
So that is how I do it.
Yeah. And here on this a painting, there are three giraffes, and they try to eat from a very huge flower. So, how is this mixed with the primitive elements and painting, and what is coming? Mm. What kind of structures coming into? What kind of idea that the giraffes are eating a flower?
Thank you. I drew a lot of my inspiration from the primitive artists, the Stone Age artists, the guys who painted on rocks. They drew kind of single profile images or two dimensional images, and I'm also inspired by the wildlife. In Uganda, we have a lot of wildlife. We have giraffes, elephants, zebras, lots of wildlife, and we also have a vegetation, a very beautiful vegetation. We have lots of flowers.
Yeah.
So you'll find that most of my paintings have reflect much of the environment around me, the wildlife, the flowers, the sun. You know, so I basically paint images of the lifestyle that I live in or the environment that I live in. That's where I get most of my images.
Yeah. And when the street children are starting to paint, what kind of motifs do they use?
Motifs?
Yeah.
For expressing themselves. It's interesting because the children really paint with their feelings, with their emotions, and that is very interesting. Like I had one stunning experience when one of the kids painted policemen, the police chasing children or chasing someone.
Yeah,
with the batons and beating that person, or kind of manhandling someone on the streets, you know. Mm. And after he painted that, I took time to talk to him, and it was a whole story behind this, because he was once arrested by the police.
Yeah.
For snatching something from someone on the street. So he was severely beaten by the police, and he was taken to prison. Okay, he was jailed for some time. Then he was transferred to a remand home for children, for juvenile offenders. So in a way, he was painting his experience with the police, and he really hated the police, you know.
Mm.
So I could see that you could see that in the painting, in his drawing, that the police are beating someone with blood coming out, and this guy is helpless, and it may not be his portrait, but he's painting something from his life. And when you take time to talk to them, it's a whole story behind the picture.
Yeah.
They paint their lifestyle. They paint their with their emotions and feelings, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
Mm.
And if they stay over 3 years in these houses where they were protected, when have you find out how they, for example, how they came into the streets? What for example happened to one of them?
It's really a long process which involves emotions, and so we take time to get to know the kids, even start to relate with, I mean, to communicate with them. So it, like I said in the beginning, I start with art, with painting. That's how I start. That is the first step. We start painting together.
Yeah.
They start painting their story. Then after painting, I talk to them, because now we are friends. We are sharing the brushes and the paints and the paper. So we become friends. They begin to trust me.
Yeah.
Then they begin to tell me their story. Some of it I see in the pictures, and some of it is still on their hearts. I mean, they're still in their mind. They still hold it inside themselves. So with time we become friends, and we begin communicating. They begin to trust me that they can tell me their previous life, which they feel should not be told to anyone. Then they start to tell me where they came from, how they came to the streets, and there are many reasons why they come, many reasons, but they start to they tell me why they came, how they came, where they come from. Then eventually we start visits to locate where they came from. Somebody else visits with them.
Yeah.
And we get to know their relatives, and we start networking with their relatives. So after the 3 years, we have worked out a relationship with their families, and they can now fit back in their homes. So we try to resettle them, try to take them to school, because they've not been in school for close to 3 years, 2 years, 1 year, depending on how long they've been on the street.
Yeah.
So we also work out ways of sending them back to school and supporting them. So it's a long process to get to all this, because at the beginning they can't trust you to tell you all their all from their background.
Yeah. So we hear always that in Uganda you have a lot of children in armed conflicts.
Yeah.
So, but that is not the reason that these children are on the streets. It's more that they have problems in the family, and that's why they disappear.
Some of them are coming to the streets.
Runaway children.
They are running out from the war.
Yeah.
The war has been, the war is basically in the northern part of the country, which is far from the city.
Yeah.
But we have many children still living on the streets of the city, of the towns in the north of the country. And some of them actually come as far as Kampala.
Yeah.
So that is one of the reasons we have children living on the streets, because the rebels or the armed the rebels want to kind of use children to fight, because the children are easily indoctrinated, and with time they develop this. They are good. They think they are better fighters than old people because they are still strong. So the rebels have been abducting more of the young boys and girls for wives, but the boys basically for fighting.
Yeah.
So we have some of the children in Kampala who are running away from that.
Yeah.
And more are in the northern towns like Gulu, which is a big town in the northern part of the country.
Yeah.
There are lots of children living on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, but Yes, it's an interesting way. If they run away from the war, from the northern side to the center, I mean, it's a really amazing trip. Do they reflect how they made this way, this trip, this journey?
Yeah.
In their pictures, maybe?
Yeah, you get to see some of that in their pictures. Some of them board trucks, like their trucks ferrying goods along the highway. Some of them hide in buses, their highway buses, and they find they were in Kampala. Or some of them ask for a lift from anyone who is driving along the way. And some of them come to try and locate their relatives who are living in the city.
Yeah.
And eventually they can't find them, so they start living on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, we have at least someone living in the... Each family in the village or in upcountry areas of Uganda has someone living in the city.
Mm.
So some of them come to Kampala to look for their relatives, hopefully to stay with them. Then eventually they can't find them, so they drift onto the streets.
Yeah.
Mm.
All right.
Yeah.
So if you like, I could play a part of an interview with the director of the art school here in Frankfurt about how how he understands the art world right now. If you like, should we play that?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah?
Please, do
okay,
that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's start. Good. And then we hear another Afrobeat.
Good.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
What is then, what kind of idea of art do you have? What students could learn out of this? Mm.
I would say that it's very much about the single professor's approach. If you look in Germany or in England or in France, people kind of know what contemporary art is. It's not that we have to define this anew. We can only contribute something. And we can contribute not a kind of new ideology or a new philosophy, but we can contribute a very personal views. And since the school is so small, I would say that all the professors that we hire, we want them to be very individual, strong artists and like models for the students. Not that the students should become like the professors, but they learn what a kind of personal attitude is, an attitude in a good sense, you know, you know, on one level we want leading artists, I mean not necessarily leading in the sense that they're big commercial successes and so, but some of them are, but that's not the important thing, but if we have someone like a painter, you probably don't know her, it's a German painter, like Christa Nehe, it's a painter, I can show you some things later. She's been around forever, she was very famous already in the 70s, she was in Documenta, etc. Now she doesn't care about the art market at all, or all of her. She's not so interested in her own career, she's more interested in the art itself, and it's a wonderful person who's just a kind of model of an artist, I feel. But so it's difficult to say what is the thing that the Städel Schule teaches. I think we teach many things, and the students have to look at these different artists as models, as possibilities. And then we have some younger people. We have a photographer called Wolfgang Tillmans, who's a kind of a superstar in photography. I mean, in Germany, one of the top people. And not everyone can become like that. That's so clear. You cannot. He's a commercial success, of course, super big, and in every trendy magazine, etc. But to have these different possibilities is important for us. To have people who work in different genres, photography, painting, installation, film, video. We still have these departments, although it's more and more problematic today to say what is painting exactly, what is photography, because it's so mixed all the time now, and so many people work in several. But still, we want people who are very good, I mean, ideally leading personalities in these different fields, who kind of can be models for students, not in modeling the sense that they have to become like them, but as a kind of a comparison possibility. It's something to, you know, you see, this is one approach. Christa Nehe, she's a painter, she does her thing. So it's very individual based, I must say. And in Germany, some people criticize this, that all the German academies still have this, maybe one could say, a little bit old-fashioned idea that, you know, you're a student with one professor. If you study here, you are in the class of, or the group of, Kristanie or Tobias Rehberger or Wolfgang Tillmans. Of course, you can speak to all the other professors, and I hope they do, and they tend to. So it should be this communication with all the professors and all the teachers, all the students. But the structure of the school is still so that, you know, each student has one grown-up person, so to say, one professor as a responsible dialogue partner. And some of the classes are rather strict that you're in this class. Others are a little bit more loose, but... Still, I mean, what I can say as a summary is that the school is very much based upon strong individual professors. So it's difficult for me to say what is our philosophy, because it's, of course, very different. And Kristanie would totally not agree with what Wolfgang Tillmans has to say. I just know that. And that's also nice, that, you know, they're incompatible. They're really, I mean, of course, they're all part in a world that we call... the world of contemporary art, and they're not, they all know it very well because they've all been in exhibitions and in museums and in collections and so. But still down, deep down, I think they don't agree at all.
Yeah. How would you describe this world of contemporary art?
I mean, it's something that has developed a lot in the last, I would say, even 10 years, because it's become more and more fashionable with contemporary art. It used to be a fairly small world, I think. Or I know, for instance, my mother was working for a big museum in Stockholm, which was then a very famous museum, Moderna Museet, and she said that when she was working there a little bit, she was not an important person there, but the world of contemporary art in Europe was so small. It was ICA in London, Moderna Museet in Stockholm, Kunsthalle Bern in Switzerland. There were like 10 places that people knew, that communicated. And that was it. And now there are museums all over the place, and very rich people, you know, it's always been the case that people have collected art, but now it's very fashionable. And so it's difficult to talk about the world of contemporary art right now without mentioning that it's very commercialized.
Yeah.
That the art fairs, you know, the galleries and the art fairs have become even more dominant and more important. And that is, on one level, why I complain. It's good that people are interested in contemporary art and want to buy it. On the other hand, there's something which is lost, I feel, very strongly myself, that it's very, you know, that it's a lot about buying and collecting and etc. But, I mean, so I would say that there's so many levels of contemporary art. There is the commercial art world with people living of art, selling art, producing art to live of, etc. And then there's the educational world, like schools, and I feel that if schools are not... of course we want our students to be successful. I mean, that's nice if they are. But if we look upon it only as something that they should be commercially successful, then we're doing a mistake. Because I think that an art academy today is really one of the few places in Europe where you can allow experimentation for experimentation's own sake. You know, where people try out things. This sounds very romantic or kind of maybe idealistic, but I do think that if you study it for 5 years, that's a long time. You have 5 years when you should learn and develop your own things, of course not just through introspection, but in dialogue with all the things, and we invite lots of people from the outside, so you should become aware of what the art world is. But it's really about developing your own art, not about making a career in the gallery world. And I feel that art, because it's the art world is a big thing now, with all these institutions and collectors and art fairs and galleries and advisors and banks and all. It's huge. The Documentas, big biennales, 100 biennales now, I think.
Yeah.
All over the world. I'm sure very soon there'll be a couple being out of contemporary art.
Yeah.
Sauti ya Dhahabu Chameleon, mtoto wa Dhahabu Chameleon. Sauti ya Dhahabu Chameleon, anafurahisha watu Chameleon. Sauti ya Dhahabu Chameleon, mtoto wa Dhahabu Chameleon. Sauti ya Dhahabu Chameleon, anafurahisha watu. Sababu nimebeba ndio muziki wangu sina maringo ninakaribisha kila mtu wenye maringo hawajui dunia ya Mungu kila mtu duniani ni binadamu haina maana kujifanya wewe superstar na kuwasahau wengi walikusaidia nani atakusaidia tena ukianguka ndio sababu mimi ninapendwa sauti ya Dhahabu Chameleon mtoto wa Dhahabu Chameleon sauti ya Dhahabu Chameleon na anafurahisha watu Chameleon sauti ya Dhahabu Chameleon.
Ja, das war Daniel Birnbaum
director of the Städel School. We met him because we went to the Porticus, and there he told us he does not understand this current exhibition from Michael Greber.
Yeah.
Michael Greber, who is always doing these Phaedrus, so something is wrong probably, but we don't know. Okay. Yeah, the art world is really in a way of dissemination, and how they are teaching or try to organize what art is. And interesting is that the professors in the Städel School are models, strong individuals.
Mm.
And maybe in the way how you work with children, I think being a model is very important as an artist.
Mm. Yeah, it's really important. When you are in such a position, let's say for the professors and the kind of work I do with the children, because you are a model, you are a mentor, and anything you do, these children or students are learning from you. And the good thing about it is that when they graduate out of the university or leave the when they graduate, they start to think individually, but they use the knowledge that you give them, or they use your image as a mirror or as a reflection in their work. You see a lot of that in the art students when they leave the university. So it's a very important position when you have people looking up to you and learning from you.
Yeah.
And I think that you kind of define the future of the art world and the art profession.
Yeah.
So it's really important.
Yeah, and now tonight you are cooking in the Freitagsküche.
Yes.
So it's a kind of traditional Uganda dish.
Yes.
Yeah, so what will we expect?
Yeah, I met friends here, and they asked me to cook in the Friday kitchen.
Yeah.
It's a very big event for artists to come together and kind of share a meal cooked by one person.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I'm putting together a traditional Ugandan dish.
Yeah.
And successfully got most of the ingredients. So I'll ask anybody listening in to come over tonight and share a bit of the Ugandan delicacies. So it's going to be a good meal.
Yeah, and Freitagsküche, it's in Atelier Frankfurt. This is Hohenstaufenstraße. The number, I think it's in the middle, close to the Ludwig Street, so I think you won't miss it. Yeah. Thank you very much. And it started at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, 8 o'clock.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, thanks for coming here. Thank you very much for the talk.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Thank you for the time and inviting me.
And goodbye to Eddie Bieler and the microphone studio, Felicia Herrscher. See you.
Siri mukode mikwano ne chiri yako wes.